You know ID in the D in the L day. ID in the D in the F E A. You know ID in the D in the L day. ID in the D in the F E A.
All right, hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton. Joined today, once again, is third Pelton brother by our friend Natalie Weiner. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Natalie just published a two-part New York Times season preview of the 2020 WNBA season, so wanted to have you on to talk about the Storm and what we can expect in general from the so-called wubble, a term I do not love. In Bradenton,
you're not Florida. You're not a fan of the wubble.
This doesn't do it for me. I don't know why.
I mean, the players seem to like it, so like I'm on board. You know,
it's true.
I guess a cute way to talk about a thing that could otherwise be sort of depressing.
Yes, that is a good point, and it's definitely better than like Sue is part of the negotiating committee in the Players Association. She was like being very careful when she was on with our friend Mina Kimes. Calling it the clean campus site, and it's like that.
Oh, geez,
that sounds too sterile. That doesn't cover it.
It's very corporate.
So as you were reporting out these pieces, how many people in the league did you talk to about what they're trying to pull off this year?
I mean, it was a pretty short timeline for the piece. I just got the assignment like late last week, so. I talked to the people quoted in the piece, who are Elizabeth Williams, who is on the Atlanta Dream, and she's awesome. She's the secretary for the executive committee of the WNBPA. I can't talk, sorry. But so she was a big part of negotiating the CBA that just got signed and all that stuff. And then Ariel Powers, who is an awesome sixth woman on the Washington Mystics, you know, reigning champs, obviously. And then Kathy Engelbert, I got a little time with, and then I actually talked with Dawn Staley cause I wanted kind of a, you know, a little then and now perspective, you know what I mean? What the league was like when Dawn was playing versus what it's like today. And obviously she's still so closely tied to the league via all of her protégés, you know?
And the role with the national team. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting time for the WNBA, as you wrote about in the main preview, because you've got the confluence of all these factors. Obviously, every sports league is negotiating how to try to play safely amidst a pandemic. But it's also in the WNBA, you know, this difficult time because there was so much excitement coming into the season about the new CBA, the most exciting offseason probably we've ever seen in the league. So. A little of that excitement has probably been dampened by the stars who have opted not to play.
Yeah, but I think there are still enough people who are going to – like, the fact that Sue and Diana are coming back and that Stewie is coming back, you know, that I think kind of – I mean, obviously no Deladon is, like, a pretty big blow. You know, the chance to see Tina and Elena on one team was going to be kind of an interesting thing to see play out. But I feel like there's enough – star power to like to fuel what's happening, and also the rookies. I mean, you know, like I think it can't be overstated how much excitement Sabrina was bringing, you know, before the pandemic, just to women's basketball in general. You know, kind of fairly or not for myself, a Kennedy Carter aficionado, but you know, like it's just you can't knock the numbers, you know, record setting triple doubles for either men or women at the college level. You know, that's just not something you see every day, you know.
You say this again. I know which regional you were at last year in the NCAA tournament because we were there together in Portland covering Oregon.
I mean, yes, but that was like because Oregon Mississippi State was like the most allegedly supposed to be the most exciting matchup. And then, of course, we saw how it went down and it wasn't quite as competitive as we had hoped. But yeah, no, I, and then what game were we all tuned into that we will get to see the rematch this weekend? Everybody wanted to watch Notre Dame versus Texas A&M, Arike Ogunbowale versus Kennedy Carter, which, you know, we'll maybe see on Sunday if they're on the court at the same time.
Yeah, which you would assume they will be.
I really hope so, because that's like the most fun matchup to me, maybe in women's basketball.
I'm curious, so you're obviously based in New York. What kind of excitement has there been about Sabrina as the number one pick? You don't have the benefit of the Liberty getting to move and play in Barclays Center, which was, again, part of the plan.
Right, but. Right. Yeah, it's – I think people were – I was sensing a lot of general excitement. I think people were definitely ready to show up to Barclays, you know, and support the team and like check out Sabrina. I mean, the difference in the sort of perception of the WNBA now versus like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, which was the last time they were in Madison Square Garden for any significant amount of time. It might even have been longer ago than that. I can't totally remember. I think is pretty big. You know, there's a lot more awareness right now. Like at that point, the league was sort of, it seems to me, at a bit of a lull, and there's been a lot of sort of campaigning to build awareness around like this is happening, etc. And like Sabrina, you know, bringing all that buzz to the big city, you know, a city that's been looking for a superstar for a long time. And I guess, you know, we have Kevin Durant showing up at some point, but still, you know what I mean? Like, it's a city that's been wanting like a star to call its own. So
Yeah, so, and the opening game of the 2020 WNBA season, the schedule when it got rewritten to account for the fact that all teams were on the right. single site, now is the Storm versus the New York Liberty on Saturday.
It's gonna be I mean, I think the Storm like definitely have the upper hand, right? I mean, there's just the veteran experience there. You can't replace that. And the fact that more of the Storm have worked together than the Liberty, you know, Liberty are looking at a lot of new faces right now, not just Sabrina. I mean, no, a Liberty with no Tina Charles is like a completely different team, right? You know, that like transforms their identity. So, you know, the new look Liberty, I mean, and they have a new coach too. So it's going to be, I don't know, seeing how it shakes out. I mean, I'm curious, Kevin, have you like been talking to players at all? Have you done much reporting on the Wubble?
Strictly the Storm, but I've been doing those media calls most days.
Okay.
And so you mentioned the Liberty and their new look. One thing that's come up is people have asked about it this week is, you know, I think Crystal Langhorne just said, well, we're going to have to watch their college tape because they've got seven rookies out right. of 11 players on the roster.
Yeah, it's going to, it'll be interesting, you know, and maybe, yeah, you hope it's competitive. I mean, all we can really hope for is a good game. And obviously, we did get a little hint of what's to come, right, when Oregon played Team USA and Sue was out there, wasn't she?
She was, yep.
Yeah, when, and like, Oregon beat them, and that was such a big thing. And we saw a little bit of the Sabrina and Sue matchup, you know, some glimpses. So it'll be interesting to follow that up.
Oh, I definitely think it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, you know, it's funny you mentioned Dawn Staley because that was kind of the player to some extent for Sue when she came into the league all these many years ago, who was the veteran point guard, particularly on the national team where she was the starter in the 2004 Olympics. Sue was off the bench. Now there's this fascinating transition where Dawn Staley is the coach. Sue's the longtime starting point guard. And, you know, we'll see if we get a 2021 Olympics, but you would assume there's a pretty good chance that Sabrina becomes the backup point guard there.
Yeah, that's a really interesting lineage. I hadn't thought about it that way. But no, I mean, I just like, I love Dawn so much and like talking to her on the phone. I mean, I've interviewed her before. I'm lucky enough to be able to say that. And like, every time I talk to her, she is just like the best person on the planet. You know, like on our call, like, what I wasn't able to put in the story, unfortunately, is like all of the like criticism she had for the haters, you know, of the WNBA. That was like, she had a lot of great quotes about that. That unfortunately it was like, I was supposed to file 600 words, you know, so there just wasn't space. But she was like, you know, the haters are still watchers. If you're hating, you're still paying attention, you know? So it's like, just get on board. And she's like, one of the things she said that just really made me laugh, and I know this is kind of a tangent from talking about like the Storm, but she was like, I would love to see any of these tiny little men like saying bad things about the WNBA to like have children and then come back and play in a league as grueling as the WNBA, you know what I mean? Which many of these players have done. So.
Okay, this kind of reminds me of my Dawn Staley story.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I was at a Charlotte Sting practice in 2005 because Cherie Sam was coming back for the first time since she'd won the championship with the Storm in 2004. So I was going to do a feature on her leading into that game. And I get there to the old Sonics and Storm practice facility, the Furtado Center, because the Storm had probably practiced earlier in the day. I'm the only media member there at that point. I don't know if anyone else showed up later. And they go in to do video. And... Uh-huh. So there's like a handful of like their broadcast crew that traveled back at that point, and some of like the strength and conditioning coaches and some people like that. And they start playing a 2-on-2 basketball game, and one of the players gets injured. And so they draft me from the sidelines into this 2-on-2 game. Charlotte finishes their video session, walks back out. The players walk back out. And Dawn Staley sees us playing and shakes her head and goes, "This is not the game I love."
Oh, my God. That is an incredible burn that I will, like, remember for a lifetime.
That is, like, the exact inverse opposite of my Cheryl Swoops, a story of playing pickup with Cheryl Swoops. That's, like, my athletic highlight, and this is my probably my athletic low light. But I was probably, like in khakis. Like, I wasn't prepared to play basketball.
Did you get a chance to explain that to Dawn? You were like, you know, I just didn't have my game day clothes on, okay?
You know, when you try to explain it, it just makes it worse. It just makes it worse.
That's so amazing. But she's, like, genuinely just, you know, she's a living legend, and the fact that she's just like down to talk on the phone and just be like, hey, yeah, like, let me talk candidly about the WNBA with this rando, you know, it's just still amazing to think about every time.
I think that entire generation of women's basketball stars, like, I imagine that part of it is for them, you know, in the early to late 90s, it was so important to gain exposure, not that it isn't now, but like, they were, so they became extremely media friendly. Like,
right.
Cheryl Swoops, Tina Thompson, Katie Smith all come through and play for the Storm. All of them were incredible interviews and great quotes. And like, my takeaway on Cheryl was, you know, most people talk in sentences and she talks in paragraphs.
Yes, definitely useful for the reporter. But yeah, and it's like, you can even see that shift a little bit talking to college players today. Like, they're so much more media trained and, like, you know, conscientious about what they're saying, which sometimes can make for more boring quotes unless you're talking to, say, like a Marina Mabry who doesn't care about anything, which is beautiful and perfect. But
she does it. She, for example, she did not notice that there was a media member, that being me, trailing behind her when she and a fellow Sparks rookie were complaining about the coaching last year, so walking out of the Everett, Angel of the Winds Casino Arena.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I mean, that's honestly, like, not gonna lie, like, I've met Ariel Powers before, so I knew it was one of those situations where it's like, I'm trying to report this story on a short timeline, so I was like, I think I can get her on the phone. Right. But also, I know she's, like, totally willing to speak candidly, like, just based on her interactions before, and she, like, doesn't care, and, like, surprise, she had some of the best quotes, and I, like, had to feature them in the story, you know?
Yep. By the way, in a related story, Marina Mabry no longer playing for the LA Sparks.
Yeah, wow, that's sad. I don't even think I realized that.
Well, but she's still in the league. She's in Dallas now, so.
Oh, shit, I missed that. See, all this off-season movement, you know, I haven't been able to keep up. But, yeah, I mean, how do you, like, I just am very interested in this Wings dream matchup. Like, I felt like Nikki Cullen is, like, one of the better coaches in the league for a while, you know, and things just haven't come together for one reason or another, but, like, and the Wings kind of, their front office is like a little big question mark there, but they have this amazing young talent, you know, Satu Savile, like Arike. I don't know. What do you think about that stuff?
I think Dallas and Indiana are going to be the two most improved teams in the league this year.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Other than maybe if you want to count the Storm, just as compared to last year, getting Stewie and Sue Bird back, like,
right.
You know,
right.
They're obviously pretty improved, but, you know, Indiana, you mentioned that Mississippi State Oregon game, and part of the reason that was so exciting was Tierra McCowan for Mississippi State, who really came on at the end of her rookie season. I think is going to be a bit of a force in the front court this year, especially with some of the better centers in the league not playing. And then Dallas, you know, they add Mariah Jefferson back, who was out all of last season after she was kind of the centerpiece of their trade, sending Liz Cambage to Vegas.
Right.
And she moves Arike Ogunbowale off the ball. She doesn't have to be a full-time point guard like she was as a rookie, and I think that should really help her efficiency.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's amazing the talent they have there, and I just hope, I don't know, that front office situation is a little interesting, but But yeah, no, Tierra. And is Victoria Vivian's playing this year? I didn't, like, check on that.
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah. So that's, like, Mississippi State Redux, basically, over in Indiana.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, no, Tierra is incredible, and it would be awesome to see her really flourish at the next level. But, yeah, I know you wanted to talk about the Storm. I mean, the Storm is, like, everything that's old is new again, right? Because it's like we just have back the centerpieces of the team.
Yeah, it's been interesting to hear players and coaches talk about it. I thought Jewel Lloyd made an interesting point yesterday when she was asked about it and said, you know, I have to look up the exact quote that got tweeted out by the Storm Chasers account, but it was something along the lines of, like, we're not the same team as 2011. We're not the same lineup because of the fact that we're not the same players as 2018, which is interesting because you did have this situation last year that a lot of people have asked about, where both Jewel to an extent and then Natasha Howard step into these larger roles with Sue and Stewie out of the lineup.
Right.
Natasha Howard thrives, all WNBA first team, defensive player of the year. You know, is there a challenge putting everyone back into that same role this year? Same thing with Jordan Canada. Starts, does a great job last season.
Our queen, Jordan Canada, next generation point guard of the world. I don't even know. She's so amazing.
And, you know, Percy Allen, who covers the Storm for the Seattle Times, and I spent a lot of time on Press Row last season at the end of the year debating, hey, what's going to happen at point guard next year when Sue's back? And it was never a question from day one. Gary Kloppenberg, who we haven't talked about, you know, in this preview, that he's taken over as head coach for Dan Hughes because Dan Hughes was not medically cleared to participate in the wobble, given his comeback his cancer diagnosis last year. Yeah. But from day one, there was never any question. Sue is the starting point guard that we're going back to that lineup.
Okay. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. But no, Jordan, I mean, she's like very nearly ready, I think. I mean, she's definitely proven herself at this point.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how, you know, do you manage Sue's minutes and try to limit those because of the fact that there's not the same kind of days off in between games, although you don't have travel in this situation, which is helpful.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that struck me about speaking with Ariel and Elizabeth. Just sort of hearing from them how different this year has been. I mean, the wobble, okay, yeah, you can't, like, go outside. But for WNBA players, this experience is so different because not only did they have 3 months rest, which WNBA players never get, you know, like, players never have time off. So, like, to have time away from the court is pretty wild for most of them. And it's also a situation where it's, like, harder for them to have stayed in shape because, like, unlike NBA players, they are very unlikely to have, like, personal gyms or even basketball hoops, as I found out, like, talking to them. But, like, so they've had this rest, and now, instead of being in transition from their overseas teams, they've actually had, like, a lot of time together to bond and practice together as teams. Like, usually not even every player is there for training camp, right? So it's, like, this year, everybody's present and, like, forced to be engaged because what else are they going to do? You know, they can't even, like, go anywhere. So just talking to them, they were like, yeah, we really feel like a different kind of connection with our team this year just because of this circumstance. And, like, maybe in a month that will have worn off and they're all going to be sick of each other, you know. But for the moment, it seems like this experience is kind of offering them in some ways an advantage insofar as they're just, like, spending more time together and, like, getting to work out, like, how they collaborate as a team. You know, it's just kind of an interesting angle that I hadn't thought of before I wrote this story.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's come up a lot is, like, WNBA players are built for this.
Like, yeah.
Oh, we're going to be away from our family and only see the players on our teams and other teams for a period of a few months. That's our experience every offseason of the WNBA.
Right.
It's not their offseason. It's their on season playing abroad. So, you know, Sue Bird has highlighted that a lot. But, you know, there's not the same level of, I guess, ennui, I would say, maybe.
Right. As in the NBA.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we can't fly out our, like, Instagram people that we've been DMing. So there's, like, all this angst. And it's like, you know, welcome to the real world.
Now, on the upside, the WNBA did manage to negotiate that players with at least 5 years of experience are all able to bring someone with them,
right,
which is, you know, different than the NBA, where you won't have the chance to have any family until after the first round of the playoffs. So.
Right. Yeah. No, that is, and it's going to be tough, I'm sure. I mean, I think it's like, in a time where we're all socially distanced, it's like maybe a little easier, but yeah, I mean, obviously if you have kids or your wife or whatever, you know, I can't even imagine. That's definitely a big sacrifice that they're making.
Right. Did you get a sense from talking, did you ask a lot about, you know, expectations for the season? It seems like the Storm are pretty heavy favorites from just about everyone with the full roster and not having lost any of their stars.
Yeah, no, I honestly didn't get too into, like, who do you think's going to win, you know, because it was just sort of more like state of the league, like, what does this all mean, you know, but yeah, I mean, fuck, like, it would be dope to have another Storm championship. I'm not, I'm obviously biased, but yeah, I'm trying to think, like, who another contender would be. Obviously, the Mystics are without, like, many of their most important players at this point. The Sun, maybe? I don't know. I mean, who from the Sun, like, what of their big players are sitting out?
Jonquel Jones, that's the big loss for them. Yeah, and they already had a bit of an off-season makeover because they lost two starters, Courtney Williams and Shekina Strickland, who both ended up in Atlanta. But
yeah, no, that's real. I just, like, I love Dawana Bonner so much. I have all the faith in the world in her, but yeah, I guess that is kind of a totally revamped team. But yeah, and the Mercury, I don't know. How do we feel about them?
So there was a lot of excitement about them in the offseason. They had Skylar Diggins-Smith via trade with Dallas. Yeah. In some ways, I don't know that she solves their problems because they actually got really good point guard play last year from Leilani Mitchell. I don't know you know, going forward, you'd rather have probably Skylar than Leilani because of the fact that she's much younger at this stage of her career and has a longer track record of star play. But they lost both Mitchell and Dawana Bonner, who you just mentioned, and ended up in Connecticut. So I don't know if that's a net huge positive for them.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I mean, like, Skylar has had, like, an interesting couple seasons, right? I mean, she was kind of in this, like, weird Wings team that, like, wasn't doing well, and then she had her baby. So, yeah, she's a little in flux right now anyway.
And then you got LA with, you know, they have still a very strong starting five, I think. They lost Elena Beard, who retired, and then Chinne Ogwumike and Christy Tolliver both decided not to participate in this season. You still got the front court of Neko Ogwumike and Candace Parker. Still got Chelsea Gray, who was all WNBA first team last year at guards. That starting five should be really good. Their depth falls off pretty quickly, though, without those players.
Yeah, no, that's real for sure. So yeah, I don't know. Storm 2020 champions. Are we gonna put money on it? Like, is that what's happening?
The odds may not be that favorable for us, but yeah, that's where my pick is. It's an interesting position though, because, you know, this is one fascinating thing. I hadn't noticed this until the AP did their preseason power rankings that they do weekly throughout the season. Doug Feinberg of the AP puts those together and noted that it was the first time in the history of that poll that the Storm had ever been number one preseason, even though they've won three championships.
Wow. Classic Seattle sports getting underrated, am I right? Nobody ever wants to, like, give us the credit we deserve, but it's fine. It's fine.
I mean, it's interesting because, like, 2004 and 2018, those were both teams that probably gelled a little more quickly than anyone would have expected those years and won championships. Yeah. 2010 was in a stretch where they had lost in the first round of the playoffs the previous 5 years, and then everything clicked, and Lauren Jackson stayed healthy. 11 is the one year where it would have really made sense, I think, for them to be number one going into it. And then last year, you know, they probably would have been the favorites going into it, but then you had the injuries to Stewart and Subert.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's like they were so ready to, like, repeat, but then it was just not meant to be, unfortunately. But they still put up, I mean, honestly, their season was so impressive, like, given the loss of these two key players in spite of that. I don't know.
For sure.
I was glad. But yeah, I mean, is there a game that you're looking forward to more than the Storm Liberty game on Saturday during this opening weekend?
No, that's definitely number one on my list.
What's number two?
I put a few of them on my must-see games for the season, which now I need to go double-check this.
I mean, I'm definitely going to vouch. I'm definitely just going to say, go watch Wings Dream, just because it will be interesting, aside from your Storm Liberty viewing. I have to see what Kennedy does in the W. I'm obsessed.
She was, I saw her, her first NCAA tournament run, where they lost in the Sweet 16 round to Notre Dame. That was in Spokane, which Oregon also was in part of that sub-regional. But yeah, she was a lot of fun to watch in person.
I mean, she's just like, it's that incredible athleticism that's just really hard to duplicate, and like the kind of showy thing that still isn't quite as common in the women's game. I mean, it's getting more common, definitely, but it's like that Jordan Canada tier, like quickness and agility and stuff. It's just crazy to watch.
Let's see. So the other games from opening weekend I put on here were Sparks Mercury.
Okay.
First look at Skylar Diggins-Smith, and then some great front court players going up against each other. And then Sky Aces, which is a rematch of that game that was so thrilling last year in the playoffs that Hamby ended up winning with a half-court shot.
True.
She thought she had less time than she had. So a different look to that without Liz Cambage, but I think those two teams still in the mix as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, we just obviously can only really hope that sort of parity that we've been seeing, increased parity, will continue, you know? I mean, there's so many great players on all the teams. It's really hard. It just matter, you know. And I'm so interested in this like X factor of being in the wobble and not having to travel, like you said, and kind of just only thinking about basketball, you know, whether that's a benefit or a hindrance.
I think it probably helps the veteran teams to some extent, although you can make a case that the format of the schedule, younger legs will benefit from that.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
All right, well, while we have you here, definitely want to make sure we talk a little Seattle sports outside the storm. First off, do you have a take on the Kraken is the name for Seattle's NHL franchise?
Oh, I don't even think I knew that. I'm like, out of hockey, I'm not out of the loop. I mean, it seems like a good name, I guess. I can get on board with it. It's not like offensive, which I guess is like the barometer we're looking at for team names right now, you know.
That's a good start.
Yeah, it's not like appropriating native culture, so yeah, sure, I'm on board.
Yeah, I mean, that was a question because totems, I think, came up at some point during the conversation. That was a possibility. The other thing I wanted to ask, so it sounds like, but there's no official announcement yet, no NFL preseason games. How do we fall in love with the Seahawks player on the bubble?
I saw somebody tweeting this, like, who was it? Like, Jason Sheethawks or whatever? I think it was him. And he was like, you know, oh, poor Seahawks fans, no preseason games, so they can fall in love with a wide receiver who won't make the team or whatever. And it was like, all right, relax, you know. Or running back. Some of us remember Troy Maine Pope, okay?
Yes. Like, never forget Troy Maine Pope.
A legend, you know? I don't know. I mean, I think we just got to do our due diligence, you know, and pay attention to that training camp footage that comes out. I mean, which, again, I just will make clear, should not be happening, you know? But as long as it is happening, and maybe some cool guys will emerge with some fun highlights, you know, just catching those Russell bombs, even though Pete refuses to let Russell cook so vehemently. Interview, I mean, like, I'm sure you've already talked about it on this podcast, but I'm just like at a loss. Like, Peter, what are you doing? When they say that Russell Cook thing, I don't know what they mean. It's like you're saying it. You're saying the thing. Like, you know exactly what it means.
Wait, I don't think I saw this interview. Hold on.
Yes, you did. It was like, it was a 7:10 thing. I'm going to find the exact quote. Just give me 2 seconds. I'll find it on Twitter.
Okay, well, I will read the Jason Sheethawks tweet while you're doing that. Okay. Shame Seahawks Twitter won't have their annual late round wide receiver they fall in love with because of one single catch in preseason to then turn into a reason to question the front office after said wide receiver is cut.
Look, okay, it keeps us entertained. And the quote is, Pete said this in an interview with 710. So whatever this Russell Cook thing is about, I don't know what it's about.
About like a new singer or something. This Russell Cook guy, I don't know.
It's just like he is literally trolling. He hates Seahawks fans and he says, I see you, I have heard this phrase, and I refuse to acknowledge it or that it has any meaning.
Oh, that's gonna be a long season.
It's just gonna be. I mean, did you see this interview at all? The thing is, like, Russell is at the best of his game that he's ever been, and in that we want him to have more opportunity to be the factor of the game and control the game, but that doesn't mean you throw the football the time to do that.
I think I did see that quote.
It's just like
a little hard to reconcile. Pete,
like, honestly, it's like, just try it. Like, okay, yes, you have to be strategic. Watch the film, X's and O's, whatever. Like, I understand, like, if the opposing team knows what you're going to do, you know, that sort of neutralizes your effectiveness. But also, like, Russell is only going to be able to throw footballs for so long, you know.
And it's much harder to make the case, like, oh, you can't win that way when the Kansas City Chiefs just won a Super Bowl playing that way.
Exactly. It's like, hello, like, this is the trend, right? I mean, obviously, I'm just totally stating the obvious, but we all know that as defenses are under more and more, like, regulation based on, like, NFL rules, you know, for safety, it's allowing receivers more room to work, you know? So, yeah. I don't know. It's, anyway, the Seahawks. We'll see what happens. The Seahawks motto.
That's what I like to say whenever I disagree with Tristan. We'll see. We'll see. And you know what? We always do. We always do, sir.
We do. You know who's been posting about the Seahawks recently?
Who's that?
Kristen Michael. He posted an IG picture of himself in his Seahawks uniform. He was like, I miss this. And I was like, yes, we also miss you, Kristen.
Well, we need to see who's going to be the Seahawks nostalgia return to the roster at some point during this season. I'm hoping for, you know, obviously to go back to our original one. Hashtag curse crew. I'm hoping to be in curse.
That would be amazing. Right. He's still a free agent, no?
He is still a free agent, yes.
Yeah. I mean, but Bruce Irvin's back with the team, isn't he? Yeah. He's like, that's a big nostalgia moment for the Seahawks. But yes, of course, Jermaine being back on the team, you know, that would be incredible.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, thanks so much for joining us. Be sure to check out Natalie's season preview coverage in the New York Times and the WNBA, and then be sure to check out the games this weekend, starting with Storm Liberty.
Definitely. Yes, I'm really glad we ended on a curse crew note. That makes it feel real.
It's a lot more upbeat than the Russ Cook thing.
Whatever that Russ Cook thing is about, who's to say, you know, really?
All right. Thanks so much for the time, Natalie.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you later.